Hot 91's All Things Property with Direct Collective.
Here with Jade and Mel Kayley from Direct Collective again for our weekly podcast. Last week we touched on the prediction of the Sunshine Coast market and the supply demand. Some big bold statements made by you, Mel, which I love, which has blown up on social media and all sorts of things. Now, this week we want to talk about, and we did touch on it last week too, the rental crisis. It's like the big white elephant in the room, really, the rental crisis, isn't it? And we've been discussing it on and off for the last 12 months, I think. Again, another thing that you did predict quite a few years back, Mel. Now, I'm always interested in your predictions, by the way, because they always seem to come true. And that's a testament to you because you really do sort of walk to the beat of your own drum. You look at all of the data that you have. There's no skewed opinions or biases, and you just deliver it and make your statements. And they seem to always be correct. And even if it's going against what some of the leading economists say, you do make those brave, bold statements. And that's why I love having a chat to you. This rental crisis, though, that we have been experiencing on the Sunshine Coast, there's so many different components to it. Obviously, there's that, you know, that human element where we have got lots of locals who have been priced out of the local area. We've had sort of a bit of a spike in homelessness. A lot of different affecting factors, I guess, that come into play here. Let's just strip it back for a second, though, and talk about the property and the real estate side of it. Firstly, is this sort of a trend? Because obviously with this crisis, again, circles back to supply-demand, which we were talking about last week. A lot of landlords have been putting up their, you know, increasing their property rental returns, getting their property prices sort of up over the new tenancies and stuff like that. How long is this going to go on for?
Well, that's a good question. It's going to go on for a while. If you look at why we and how we predicted it 10 years ago, it's because what we do isn't defined in any specific analytical model. You know, we like to call it market intelligence. So we've got a really robust way of looking at the sources of information and qualifying those sources and then looking at the information itself and qualifying that. And then what we do is we actually look at potential outcomes. So when we wrote that article 10 years ago and we say, look, we see a housing crisis is because we looked at all the infrastructure that was coming. We looked at the number of people that were coming and we believed that the estimates were wrong. We could see that they couldn't meet the based on the modelling that the council were using, that they wouldn't be able to meet supply, that there wasn't enough interest from developers, etc., to be able to deliver to meet that. And so when you had all of these factors coming together, we went, well, if all of that comes together, literally a perfect storm, and by about this time, if it's not addressed, then it will result in a crisis.
And here we are.
Yeah. So, and then what we do along the way is we look at the indicators. And so when we look forward and we apply that same modelling, is there isn't a solution on the horizon. That's a harsh reality. It's a social issue. It's something that we all need to understand. But we can then look at what the impacts are. And, you know, it's not necessarily landlords putting up rents for what it's worth. You know, and that gets a bit of bad publicity around, you know, oh, these greedy landlords. Oftentimes it's tenants competing for those properties that are driving
bidding
the rents up. Yeah,
absolutely. And that's the thing. I mean, anecdotal stuff, you know, I've been talking to a lot of different real estate agents over the last few months, and I was talking to a property manager not so long ago, and she did say it has started to slow down in terms of, instead of getting 50 people to an inspection and, you know, 35 sort of applications, it's sort of down to a little bit more manageable numbers, you know, might be more like 20 coming through and 7 or 8 applications. So still, you know, that demand it's still there, but it's not as intensified. But can I just ask you, Mel, in your opinion, do you think that COVID drove a lot of this? Because a lot of people are saying, oh, well, you know, a lot of Southerners, again, we're blaming Sydney-siders and Victorians, that have decided that, hey, I don't need to really run my company from here. I can be on the Sunshine Coast and do it from there. So do you think COVID has affected this as well?
Well, 10 years ago, I couldn't predict COVID.
No. Why not now? Why not?
So it's a fundamental market position of an undersupply of property for the number of people that are coming here. It's been amplified by COVID, absolutely. But and this is why we're feeling it in more extreme circumstances than other areas, is because we already had the problem. It's a fundamental lack of supply. And if you look at the Sunshine Coast, you know, 50 years ago, we got a name. People moved here. They either built a four-bedroom house, you know, on a bigger block, or they had a...
It was three bedrooms back there.
Well, and a holiday house. So, you know, if even today, 65% of our approvals are for detached dwellings, and yet the actual demand profile puts that somewhere at 20 to 30%. So we haven't built enough of the right product for a very long period of time. So where you have a family who wants to move to the coast, or a family that's grown up here and has formed and wants to move, you know, and couples are trying to, you know, find their own space, you might have a couple who's looking to downsize and free up that home for them. It's got nowhere to go because we just haven't been building enough product and of any kind across the board. So what that then does is it increases the competition. So now add the amplification effect of COVID, and it's just made everyone realise. So what people are kind of saying is, oh, it's just COVID, it's going to pass. No, this issue has been here and been building since 2011, is when the undersupply of properties per annum started on the Sunshine Coast. So that's a 10-year issue that, based on the current planning and where everything's at, is going to take more than a 10-year solution.
I was just about to say, that's what I'm... It sounds like you're alluding to the fact that this sort of won't go away instantly. It's not... There's no quick fix.
No, we need real solutions for homelessness and an immediate change to planning and a view around planning. But it's not something that you can fix overnight. It's something that we can work towards over the next sort of 2 and 3 years. But a real fix is going to take 5 to 10.
So do you think, and does this come back to, again, something that we touched on last week about the, you know, I guess the timeframes around how long it takes to get developments through council and, you know, from that process all the way through to the end user. Is that something that we need to speed up? Do we need more investors in our market? Do we need people to start to, or those developers to start to look at things differently? Like, although it's going to take time and there's no quick fix, what are a couple of quick things that you think need to adjust?
Political intent. So at a state and a local level, and, you know, federal level as well, but particularly state and local to find solutions. The planning system needs a review, and we spoke last week about a simple duplex approval that under the system should have been approved in 20 days that took 9 months. Mm. So there needs to be political intent, a structural change in how we actually work through process. You know, the old cliche around we need to deal with the red tape. But it's an education process within those who bring work through the approvals. And then it's a public partner and private partnership to actually develop the solutions to how we can bring some even short-term change. So it's all levels of government. It's funding is becoming easier, so it is easier for developers, which has been a constraint for a long period of time. But part of the problem we have is there's a lot of people who would look to deliver some good affordable solutions on the Sunshine Coast, and there are others who are attempting to do that. But now we've got a new problem with supply chain issues on construction product.
I was about to say.
You know, but there's also not enough people yet know the story of the Sunshine Coast. And so this is part of our problem is we haven't had enough data. You know, if you look at CoreLogic, for example, they'll talk about Darwin of 80,000 people, but they'll have nothing about the Sunshine Coast. We get lumped with Warwick and Longreach as the rest of Queensland.
We do.
So
yes.
So there needs to be a complete change of focus to truly understand the problem, and then a cohesive, robust debate identifying positive solutions at every level.
Now, I'm going to digress. Like I said, there's obviously the human element and that side of this crisis which is occurring. But I do want to shift a little bit now and take probably more of a little bit of an opportunic sort of situation and ask the obvious question that, you know, if there is this such demand for rental properties at the moment, you know, what opportunities are there for people who are already living on the Sunshine Coast that have been considering investing? I mean, would you say that it's a good time as an investor to invest in the Sunshine Coast? Because, I mean, obviously our interest rates are so low. You know, a couple of weeks ago, the Reserve Bank didn't change them again. It looks like they're going to remain unchanged for quite some time. You know, people can access equity and all those sorts of things right now. Would you be saying to someone, yeah, go invest, you know, head out to wherever? What's your thoughts?
So there's a couple of things in that. So some really big picture things is we have an undersupply, okay, that can't be resolved in probably 5 to 10 years. So that suggests price pressure and rental yield pressure. So that's a problem for tenants as well. So that's not going to go away. So that suggests that from an investor, there's a good return to be made, and we need investors to help provide solutions to this market. The next part of that is, though, when you look at what's actually being said by the RBA and APRA, APRA puts the regulation in place. They're saying the settings are fine. We don't see any need to change in the short or medium term any of those settings. RBA is coming out saying that we've got no intent of raising interest rates anytime soon. So we've got cheap funds, which means that, you know, on the Sunshine Coast, when you look at the rents you're achieving, you know, pretty much everything is cash positive or positively geared. So there's good returns for investors, so they can afford those properties. There's high growth profiles. But also, when you look at where the market is going, even when the macro picture, even when the Australian property market, although I don't like that term, starts to slow as a whole, the Sunshine Coast should continue to grow for a number of years beyond that. So it is probably the number one investment location in the country. And what that means is that they've got the ability to grow, and for those who can afford to invest, those who can afford to create property and affordable accommodation for those who need to rent, it's not just the opportunity here to invest in property and make good money out of it. It's actually the opportunity to do multiple because of the growth in equity and cash flow.
Now, it's interesting that you say that, because I am going to throw something here at you again. But I do know a lot of people who are in the situation where they've been priced out of their local market. In terms of, you know, growing up in this area, always dreamt of owning their own home, saving actively, and have just, over the last 12 to 18 months, 2 years, the property prices have risen so much they want to buy something, not necessarily their forever home, because they can't afford to live where their kids go to school and all those sorts of things. So they are looking to invest. Talk to me, though, about, I think it's rent vesting.
Rent vesting,
where you actually just continue to rent, but you actually go and buy an investment property, because the Sunshine Coast is a massive place. There's a lot of great opportunity to invest. What's your thoughts on rent vesting? Because some people say, well, you know, if you're in a family home in the suburb you want to live in, where your children go to school, and you're happy to rent, but you can invest, it's a great idea because you're getting into the market. Other people will say, well, you're sitting there paying someone else every week that rent money, you may as well be tearing it up. So it's an interesting conversation, and it kind of ties into this topic. But what are your thoughts on rent vesting?
I love rent vesting. So let me start there.
Okay, let me
explain it. So the challenge with, you know, people talking about tearing up dead money is actually a lack of education, because if you think about where we're taught to make money, we create money. Okay, so we're not talking about earning money. We're not talking about a job. We're not talking about how you save. We're talking about, where do you go to learn how to create, make money out of nothing? And so it's not taught at school. It's not taught in universities. And so we're leveraging off of some people's experience. Some people had a crack and got it wrong. But also, you know, if someone's parents were property investors many years ago, how they built a portfolio then is entirely different to how you can succeed now. So it's about getting that right input. And so in that, when you, one of my favorite sayings around opinion and what people are saying, if this is what everyone says, is consensus view is not evidence. You know, consensus view is no excuse for free thought. So we've got to look differently. And if you look at the fact that less than 3% of the population retires independently wealthy, that means 97% of the conversations aren't going to get you there.
Right. That's a pretty scary figure.
It is.
That is a very scary figure.
It is slowly increasing.
Good.
But it's a very, very small number. So what we then have to look at is what do they do differently? And the first thing they do is think differently. And so thinking differently means you're going to act differently. And so the strength of rent vesting, it's about understanding property as a financial instrument, and it's about understanding your life as a business. So what you're worth, your equity you're creating, you know, that's your balance sheet. If a property is going up in value, so even in the days of negatively geared property, you could talk about the net wealth increase. If it cost you $2,000 in cash flow to hold it, but it went up $50,000, well, you've made a $48,000 increase, right? But what we're also then talking about is cash flow. And so if it costs you less to live in a property, so I like to say rent someone else's dud investment while your good investments are making money. And so you can live on a waterfront. So let's just pick some numbers. So a $1 million property, which doesn't get you a lot now. You know, more million-dollar homes in lots of suburbs, Nambour, Sippy Downs now.
So, but
let's just use it as a number. So if you could buy a $1 million property, and in that property you might be paying, you know, $800-900 a week.
Yes.
So we're talking, you know, 2 years ago.
Yes.
But you could have then bought two properties for $500,000 that were getting $550 a week rent.
Mm.
Okay. So, but the thing is, over a 10-year period, that $1 million property might have gone up to $2 million and then come back a bit, you know, because they fluctuate more because it's a smaller market. So it might end up at about 1.65. Okay. So we're not talking about what's happening now. We're talking historical examples.
Yes.
But that $500,000 property could have been worth $1 million next to that $1.65 million property. But now you're talking two properties, right?
Mm.
So those two properties are now $2 million. So that's a 35% difference on your return on investment. When you then take into account the cash flow has been better as well. So the cash flow of those two properties have more than paid for the growth on the two and helped pay your rent where you're living, which means that now you've got an extra. You can go sell those two properties, buy that property, and put $350,000 in the bank.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Interesting little case scenario there.
So it's not about doing it today. It's about where do I want to be over the next 5 and 10 year period. And the problem is, we live in an environment where we overestimate what's going to happen in the next 15 minutes, in the next 12 months, but we completely underestimate what we can achieve over 5 and 10 years.
This is why I love talking to you, Mel. All the inspiration and all the facts. Very interesting. Look, let's sit tight and see what happens. We'll touch on the rental crisis on the Sunshine Coast and just the rental market on the Sunshine Coast ongoing in our podcast that we will discuss every week. So if you want Mel and I to discuss a particular topic related to the Sunshine Coast real estate market, get in touch with us at hot91.com.au or follow me on socials, Jade Harrison Media, and let us know what topic you want us to discuss. Mel, love having you in here. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
For more on Hot 91's All Things Property with Direct Collective, head to hot91.com.au.